leader!
Parliament resumed after a week's adjournment at 2 on Tuesday, with the Prime Minister, John Key, keen to celebrate the All Blacks' winning of the Rugby World Cup for a third time by beating the Wallabies at Twickenham last Sunday.
Mr Speaker, I was in the privileged position to be there for both the semi-final and the final. Well, I was, yes, I was actually. But Mr Speaker, I must admit that after the semi-final, I had a brief chat to Richie McCaw where I said to him, who do you think will be in the final, Mr Speaker? He said, I don't know, but I hope it's Australia because we're going to take them apart. And that, Mr Speaker, is exactly what they did. Mr Speaker, they're an All Black side that makes every single one of us feel good and they deserve our congratulations.
Before passing the Prime Minister's motion regarding the All Blacks, members heard from their Speaker, David Carter, about the Greens' replacement for their former leader, Russell Norman, whose resignation after 7 and a bit years as an MP took effect the previous Friday, October the 30th.
I have been advised by the Electoral Commissioner that pursuant to Section 137 of the Electoral Act 1993, Madama Mariana Davidson has been declared to be elected a member of the House of Representatives in place of Dr. Russell Norman. I understand that Madama Davidson is present and wishes to make the affirmation. Would she please come forward to the chair on my right?
After making the affirmation in Māori, Madama Davidson took her seat in the back row of the Greens benches, ready to deliver her maiden speech before the dinner break on Wednesday.
I was 14 years old when my nan passed away. So that was a long time ago. But the fact that I can almost never talk about her publicly without crying is testament to the impact she still has on my life. From the start, my nana was warm, overly doting, and exemplified au whakatauki he taonga te mokopuna. My beautiful older cousin Jean is the oldest mokopuna, but we didn't find out about her until I was 6 years old, and we have been grateful for her ever since. But I, in effect, was the first person to make my nan an actual nan. And I was born on her and my papa's 25th silver wedding anniversary. I've been told I was a fantastic anniversary present. My nan to me felt physically and spiritually like a soft, squishy, gentle and caring nana. From a young age, I got a sense of us, her mokopuna, being the absolute centre of her universe. What I did not know of until later was her stubborn commitment to justice. I must have been about 12 or 13 when my nana took me to her work one day. She ran the lunch cafe at a large firm in Otara. Extra help was needed on this particular day, and the boss had asked my nan if she knew of anyone. Nan's boss agreed that I could come in and help them out for the day. I remember helping my nana prepare kai for the workers, wash dishes, serve customers, and clean the kitchen. It was a good day of mahi. At the end of the day, my nana's boss refused to pay me. He tried to worm his way out of the agreement, saying that I had come in for, quote, work experience. I'll never forget my nan's face as she glared at her boss in the eye. She sent me away to wait in the hall while she sat opposite her boss trying to sort it. But even from a distance, I could feel her staring the unfairness down. Here was my soft, squishy, gentle-voiced, lovable nana, who I had never seen face conflict in my life, putting up a relentless fight for her wronged granddaughter, for me. I cannot actually remember what became of that heated debate, but what I can remember is how Nan made me feel. To this day, my whole being recalls her fierce determination to right a wrong, her courage to not let the power imbalance dominate her, her commitment to ensure that those most vulnerable had someone sticking up for them, and her gumption to hold her line no matter what. If I could bring a tiny bit of my nana's mana to my work, then I will know that I have succeeded. My name is Marama Davidson, and I come from a long line of stubbornness. Indeed, my own parents met on these very steps of Parliament. They were young, urban displaced Māori in the 70s. They came to protest the loss of land and language that our people had shouldered. They were just hungry for their whakapapa. I'm honoured to be a member of this House today, continuing their fight on the very same steps. Our world desperately needs us to reconnect with each other and our living systems. The challenges that we are facing today are born from disconnection. Everything is supposed to be connected. We are supposed to be connected to each other as neighbours and as a global community. My well-being is supposed to be connected to yours. We are supposed to be connected to the life systems that nourish us. We are supposed to be connected to the future we are designing for our mokopuna and generations to come. My pride in my whakapapa is supposed to be connected to your pride in yours. When we are disconnected, we create grossly unequal societies that are unstable, and we damage our living systems and our climate. These are the challenges of the 21st century, and they are inextricably connected. Inequality and climate change perpetuate each other. Indeed, to tackle either, we have to tackle both. What I've seen happening is successive governments protecting and penalising the wrong people. They've got it completely backwards. They've pulled out the red carpet for the big corporations who have at their core the pillaging of earth, the extraction of its natural resources, and the exploitation of its people. They want to share the risks, but not the benefits. Meanwhile, they are penalising the people who protect and strengthen our communities, our economy, and our natural world. What I am inspired by globally are the Indigenous peoples who are fighting against the short-sighted agendas that will destroy their place and their people. We have to understand that affirming Indigenous rights and supporting our traditional wisdoms is essential to combating climate change and inequality. Thankfully, tangata whenua and non-Indigenous people everywhere are melding our wisdoms and our strategies to demand a new way together. Because we can see that the very few protecting the status quo want most of us kept out of their fancy club. Together, we all have a bigger club than theirs. At the beginning of this year, my family were priced out of our rental property, and so we sought another, cheaper house in Auckland to rent. I looked at 30-something houses and applied for 20-something of them. For some properties, there were more than 30 other applicants. I did not get called back for any of them, and I started to feel every bit of whatever it was that meant that we were not preferred renters. Finally, we got a call back, and it was for a house that no one else was lining up for. It is the house we are renting now, and we all love it and are grateful for it. It's a great house. Fast forward 9 months, I'm now an MP looking for accommodation in Wellington, and the reception I've had couldn't be more different. I've gone from being at the back of the house hunting line to being right at the front. You know what? You shouldn't have to become an MP to get a house to live in. I will relish the opportunity to make a difference with my social housing portfolio. I recognise that even then, when I was searching for a home in Auckland, compared with others, I was still dripping with privilege. I know that for too many, the search for a home is far more desperate. In my community of Manurewa, nearly 30% of young people were unemployed at the last census. It was only 18% in 2006. In my community, people are living in homes so filled with mould that it's making kids sick. In my community, people are working two or more jobs and are still struggling to pay for the food their children need. Families are literally struggling to survive. Protecting that failed economy is cowardice. Creating a long-lasting economy and society that works for all of us will take some guts. And the communities who have the guts need this place to back them. They need us to feel the urgency and excitement that they feel about creating change. E te māngai o te whare, ka huri au ki tōku reo rangatira. Ka tahi anō au ka tīmata I taku ohonga reo. E tika ana ka tuku mihi honore ki a koutou e hāpai ana I te reo. Ara ko ngā kaiako, ngā kaiawhina, ngā tohunga o tēnei mahi ki a kōrero tia te reo. A mihi māhana ki a koutou o te whare paremata kua whiu atu tēnei taonga tuku iho. Ki ngā wahine matatau, reka rawa te whakarongo atu ki o koutou tū ki runga I te reo. Āna, nanaia mahuta, hekia parata, marama fox mā, nei rā taku waroha ki a koutou. Engari, te maha hoki o ngā tangata pēnei a māwako me tīria, kāre anō mātou kia whiwhi. He Māori tonu mātou. Kei a mātou tonu te aroha mō tēnei reo a tāhua. Ahakoa te whakamāki te kōrero, ahakoa te mamai. I tēnei wā, ka mihi ki te aopā pāho, I tō koutou akiaki ki au, ki te kōrero, ahakoa ngā hapa, au e te maha. E ai ki te kōrero, mā te hapa kāko. A me haere tonu mātou e ako tonu ana. Nō reira ka tino tautoko au I te mahi whakapiki reo. He mahi whakapapa, he mahi mokopuna, he mahi tiriti o Waitangi tēnei. I am proud to be wearing this korowai, which represents my ngai tūpoto whakapapa, my nana's people. My uncle said it'd be good to get a bit of ngai tūpoto kākahu in the house because there's too many Ngāti Hine in here, they reckon. Ki ōku whanaunga o Ngāti Hine, Winston, Peter, Rino, Penny, Riamā, anei taku patipati kia koutou. My whole family have travelled here for this moment because it belongs to all of us collectively. I love you all so much. Thank you. Hari huri tau ki a koe taku pirinihi taku ira mutu he kōtiro kaitiaki o te reo ko hana a maia māringi paratene aroha mutunga kore mōu. Kua waruia. My six off-the-charts, stunning, incredible children whose sacrifice is about to get very real. You are my everything. Hiria, Anna, Dakota, Manawa, Horauta, Taina. I love you. To a beautiful man, Paul, who absolutely hates the limelight, doesn't care too much for politics and would rather sit in the hidden spaces, I am sorry that you married into absolutely the opposite. Ironically, you still stand with me, and ironically, it is all that you are and that you do for us that is the only reason I can be here in this very public, very political space. I love you, and I'm sorry. I can't wait to get started with this amazing Green Caucus. Oh, there you go. We like to keep our water clean and for everybody. I'm really humbled by people who made sacrifices to come here. I see you. And people who continually make sacrifices for our causes. You are why I'm here. Every time I stand in this house, I will remember that. Because this place is here to serve the people. The people are not here to serve government. And as my co-leader, Metiria, has said, the power in our country belongs to the communities, and part of my job is to get the government to step aside, to set up systems so they work well, and then to get out of the way and let communities take control of what they need and deliver for their people. Nō reira, nei te mihi aroha ki a koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, huri noa ki a tātou katoa. Kia ora.
The Greens' new list MP, Marama Davidson, her maiden speech was followed by the House adjourning for the day, having started at 9 a.m. by mutual agreement in the Business Committee to push an omnibus government bill through its third and final reading. The Organised Crime and Anti-Corruption Bill, amending a dozen existing laws, was split into 15 separate bills taken together for their final reading and opposed only by the New Zealand First Party, which also stood alone against the second reading of a bill introducing a bright line test for taxing income from sale of residential land within 2 years of its purchase, and also a bill allowing the government to join the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, their opposition voiced by their trade spokesman, Fletcher Tabateau.
The government has agreed to put US$92 million up front into this investment bank. Mr Speaker, I don't think anyone can dispute that this is a vast sum of money that could be used to have been invested in New Zealand infrastructure.
Across the chamber, Fletcher Tabateau's arguments were ridiculed by National's Jamie Lee Ross.
It will come as no surprise to members in this House that the New Zealand First Party stands as the only party in this Parliament opposed to greater infrastructure development in Asia.
But it was the New Zealand First Party's deputy leader, Ron Mark, who managed to offend all parties with his contribution to the debate on Tuesday night when the House tackled an issue that had been on its order paper for decades, the vexed question of whether shops should be allowed to open at Christmas and Easter. Rhys Lyon reports.
The Shop Trading Hours Amendment Bill throws the decision on Christmas and Easter trading over to local councils. And as it involves religious beliefs, it required, as it has in the past, a conscience or personal vote in which MPs filed into the lobbies on either side of the debating chamber to be counted. That came after a sometimes fiery debate, especially after New Zealand First's deputy leader, Ron Mark, took exception to National MP Melissa Lee's stance on the bill.
Melissa Lee told the House that we need to grow up in New Zealand. Well, I've got a short message. You don't like New Zealand, go back to Korea. That's the first message. The second message is, let's look at public holidays in Korea. Public holidays that people don't work on. Buddha's birthday. Holy heck! So now we say that New Zealanders should have to work on a religious day, but in Korea, where Miss Lee comes from, Buddha's birthday is a public holiday where no one works.
And Ron Mark's criticism wasn't confined to Melissa Lee.
So let's look at another National Party member. Oh, jeepers. Kanwaljit Singh Bakshi. This gentleman sits in this house to support this legislation, but let's have a look at India. There are so many. I couldn't read them out in this time that I have available, Mr. Speaker. But one of the religious holidays in India is Easter, where people don't have to work. And let's have a look at a few others. Well, Eid al-Fitr, Eid al-Adha, Eid al-Gandhia, And let's not forget Mahatma Gandhi's birthday.
That got this response from Kanwaljit Singh Bakshi.
I would like to clarify a few things which previous speaker has raised. On any religious day in India, if there is a public holiday, every business is open and they trade. The only two days when the whole India is closed, it is not religious day, it is the Republic Day of India and Independence Day. So for your knowledge, clarify yourself and before you speak, and don't try to be racist.
National's Kanwaljit Singh Bakshi. The debate on the bill's first reading ended with this announcement from Assistant Speaker Lindsay Tish.
The Speaker has determined that the subject of this vote will be treated as a conscience issue. In this case, I know there are members who want a personal vote, and I'm prepared to accept one. The ayes will go to my right. The noes will go to my left. Abstentions will come to the table.
And the result of the vote...
Members, the ayes are 75, the noes are 45. The motion is agreed to. Unlock the doors.
With that majority of 30 votes, the Shop Trading Hours Amendment Bill was sent to the Commerce Committee to be reported back by April the 3rd next year.
Rich Lyon, and he'll be back with his weekly roundup from the committee rooms. While in the chamber, an increase in the unemployment rate was the subject of this question from Greens co-leader James Shaw.
To the Prime Minister, is it acceptable to him and his government that the number of unemployed people in New Zealand has increased by 11,000 this quarter, or more than the entire population of Gore?
The Honourable Prime, Right Honourable, the Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, it's not a surprise that the employment market's a bit softer, because in the first half of this year, national income dropped by billions of dollars when the dairy prices dropped.
While Bill English answered the Greens co-leader's questions to his Prime Minister on Wednesday, answers to questions to him from his Labour shadow, Grant Robertson, on Thursday came from further along the government's front bench.
Why did he say that 151,000 New Zealanders being out of work was, quote, to be expected? And does that mean that unemployment at that level is collateral damage in his hands-off style of economic management?
The Honourable Stephen Joyce.
Well, Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Finance, I think this government is anything but hands-off.
And James Shaw also had this question for the Minister in charge of the Security Intelligence Service, Christopher Finlayson.
Does he have confidence in the NZSIS in light of the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security's conclusion that the agency did not have, quote, sound compliance procedures and systems in place, end quote? If so, why?
The Honourable Chris Finlayson.
Yes, because the SIS is making very good progress towards improving its compliance procedures and systems, something the Inspector General acknowledged in her report.
Mr Shaw's request for a snap debate on the SIS report was rejected by the Speaker, who nevertheless left the door open for another application at some future date.
One factor in deciding whether to allow an urgent debate is that the intelligence and security agents are subject to very little parliamentary scrutiny. I note that the report states that the Inspector General is undertaking several inquiries into important aspects of the operation of the security and intelligence agencies. The final reports on those inquiries may warrant the attention of the House, depending on those findings.
Now to the committee rooms for this report from Rhys Lyon.
For a cotton bag.
Thursday was Guy Fawkes Day, and a meeting of the Local Government and Environment Committee at Parliament's Bowen House was interrupted due to a fire in the building next door, leaving the committee's chairman, Scott Simpson, to clear the room.
Wow, this is interesting. That's a time to leave the building alarm.
The committee had been hearing evidence on a petition signed by more than 16,000 people calling for a phase-out of single-use plastic shopping bags in New Zealand. The petition was presented by Rebecca Bird on behalf of Our Seas, Our Future, who explained the problem with plastic bags.
They have a high environmental impact due to their highly polluting degradation process and their long-term persistence in the environment.
Providing the science to back up the petition was Massey University environmental anthropology lecturer Trizia Farrelly.
They are consumed by fish and they get into our food chain. They're ingested by also marine birds and other species.
Dr. Farrelly called on a levy on plastic bags.
This recommendation is based on a huge number of international case studies. For example, Northern Ireland and Scotland, 80 to 90% approximately, drop in bags in the very first year that a levy was rolled out. Huge, huge reduction of plastic bags.
Trizia Farrelly with that evidence on a petition calling for a phase-out of plastic shopping bags on Thursday. Earlier in the week, on Tuesday, an Education and Science subcommittee began hearing evidence on its inquiry into the identification of dyslexia, dyspraxia and autism in schools. Making one of the first submissions to that inquiry was Ross Dunn, a teacher from Wellington College who outlined problems faced by dyslexic pupils by telling the story of one of his students.
Let's call him David. I was working closely with him. He said to me that he sees words floating. So I said, well, dyslexia, have you ever talked about that, thought about that, has anyone mentioned that? And I asked him to go home to talk to his mother about this. So he went back and spoke to his mother, and we organised...
Mr Dunn applied to the New Zealand Qualifications Authority for David to have special support in sitting his exams.
But it was out of the due date. This meeting with him where I realised he was dyslexic was in late May. The new applications closed in mid-April. And I was told when I tried to apply, you should have known your student. And so I was told that there could be no application, that next year he could apply. This was in his crucial first year of NCA.
Ross Dunn then took the matter up with the Commissioner for Children.
And they represented David's case to NZQA, who backed off completely, said that we could put in an after-date application after first turning me down. So he was given special assessment conditions of a reader, writer and extra time. And he's doing particularly well, so it's a success story.
Wellington College Special Needs Coordinator Ross Dunn, one of more than 30 submissions to the Education and Science Subcommittee's inquiry into the identification of dyslexia, dyspraxia and autism in schools on Tuesday and Wednesday. In total, there were 17 committee meetings held during the week.
Rhys Lyon, and back in the chamber, Wednesday's general debate included some media commentary from Labour's David Cunliffe.
Sir, it's a standing joke that primetime TV is a choice between Wright, Paul Henry national candidate, and writer, the irreplaceable Mike Hosking. Irreplaceable, because he pops up just about everywhere. If you don't believe me, just ask John Campbell, Carol Hirschfeld, Julian Wilcox, Brian Rudman, John Drennan, and so on and so forth. Contrary independent voices that have been removed from primetime TV and newspapers and taken refuge in the ark, Radio New Zealand. Well, I wonder what's going to happen to Radio New Zealand, given that New Zealand On Air is controlled by the Prime Minister's electorate secretary. Is they going to stop funding that broadcaster that's run by a former National Prime Minister's chief media advisor? Tell me they're not screwing the scrum, ladies and gentlemen.
Labour's David Cunliffe wondering what's going to happen to Radio New Zealand, reported to have changed its name to RNZ. And if you're wondering whatever happened to the Radio New Zealand Amendment Bill, containing the public broadcaster's revised charter and on the government's to-do list for over 6 years, it came within an ace of completing its committee stage last month before dropping back down to number 25 on the order paper, although it's back up to number 6 and an outside chance for a run next week, although it didn't get a mention in Thursday's business statement from the Deputy Leader of the House, Simon Bridges.
When the House resumes on Tuesday, 10 November, the government will look to make progress on a number of bills on the order paper, including the Support for Children in Hardship Bill and the International Finance Agreements Amendment Bill. Wednesday, 11 November, is a Members' Day.
And we'll all be looking forward to that. I'm Tom Fruin, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.